WMFO Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. This morning, we're going to play tribute to Bernard Herrmann. He considered himself a composer over a movie score. And the reason I'm featuring Bernard Herrmann throughout the show is because he worked with Orson Welles at CBS. He's credited with scoring the War of the Worlds broadcast. Next week, next Tuesday, will be the 80th anniversary of that broadcast. So I don't know. I tried to get some of the orchestra pieces off of War of the Worlds. I don't even remember what that one's called. One's Stardust. But I don't know if that was, if his orchestra actually did that. I've read varying reports. If it was actual live in the studio, or if they had pre-recorded that. And music compositions there where the broadcasts first interrupt. He's also married to Lucille Fletcher, which is notable. For Sorry Wrong Number, a radio play, and The Hitchhiker. And Bernard Herrmann, he also worked with Orson, not just Orson Welles, but Alfred Hitchcock and Rod Serling. So I'm going to go ahead and play a selection, because there was nothing in the library last week here, and I didn't have any, so I went ahead and it's got a little Bernard Herrmann double CD. I'll play selections off that. This first one you should all recognize. This is Arthur. You're listening to The Grand Hour on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org.
Thank you.
Theme from the Twilight Zone that began in 1959. I was to understand, though, that he wrote for season one. The do 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 do. I'm not so certain that was him. This is off a CD I got from the City of Prague Philharmonic Orchestra playing selections from some of his famous movies. I'll feature a few more of those. Again, he didn't really consider himself a sound film score so much as a composer. He did such notable ones as Citizen Kane and worked with Alfred Hitchcock. Even Martin Scorsese was his last film in 1976 when he scored Taxi Driver. I believe it was his last one. And next up here, I'm going to play Orson Welles, The Interview, on the 31st of October 1938, the day after the War of the Worlds recording, well, broadcast was aired. He had to meet the press, answer some questions. It's kind of spotty audio, so bear with it. And it's retrieved off of a collection I got on YouTube, which it appears to be a collection of snippets from Getty Images, the Getty Press Company. They had several of them, all like 20 seconds, 30 seconds. And somebody apparently tried to splice it all together. So that's why there's some, it's spotty, but that's coming off the Getty site. I was not able to find a complete press conference. He just answers some interesting questions, says some interesting stuff. Of course, he's kind of witty on some things. So I'll go ahead and try and play this for you. Again, this was the press conference on the 31st of October, 1938.
Psychologically, I simply don't know. I can't imagine. I mean, you must realize that when I left the broadcast last night, I went into dress rehearsal for a play that's opening in 2 days, and I've had almost no sleep, and I know less about this than you do. I haven't read the papers except
for the first opinion you had that something was wrong.
After it was
indeed. You were aware of terror at the time you were giving this role. Were you aware that terror was going on throughout the nation?
Oh, no, of course not. We did Dracula, and it seemed to me during Dracula I had high hopes that people would react as they do in a movie of that kind, and I don't know that they did, particularly, and so I've given up. One doesn't believe in the radio audience, but you don't know that they're whether they're listening or not. You have no idea how many people are listening and what they're thinking. I had every hope that the people would be excited as they would be at a melodrama.
But the audience is taking the years already.
Tone down the... Do it again. But you don't play down the melodramatic effect of a melodrama.
Have you altered your plans for future problems in any way as a result of this incident?
Naturally, we will have to sit down and think very carefully about future broadcasts.
Can you make any specific changes in any programs that were already scheduled, such as next week, for instance?
No. Mr. Wells, three short stories.
When you're in this movie with the camera, when you spoke about race, with the film, the paper, this began on this program would know that there was no such thing as Martians.
Well, it seems to me unlikely that the people of an invasion from Mars would find ready acceptance. I was frankly terribly shocked to learn that it did. No.
I'm primarily the... Mr. Wells, why did you use local towns in this
book? Well, H.G. Wells uses local towns addressing an English audience. I was addressing an American audience, so the transplantation was quite logical. So he doesn't use mythical towns. He uses quite real ones.
It was a mythical town,
but it was near enough. It was near enough to a real name. I've forgotten how we figured it out. It's either it's Grover's Mills or it is Grove's Mill or something. At any rate, we changed it slightly, hoping that would a thing which H.G. Wells did not do. His names are quite real English towns. Without any change, man.
Do you think, Mr. Wells, that you might have taken unfair advantage of the public in using a method as a conveyance for authentic news?
I don't believe that I have since. It is not a method original with me. It is used by many radio programs. I am terribly shocked by the effect it's had. I do not believe that the method is original with me or peculiar to the Mercury Theater's presentation.
Do you think there ought to be a law against such enactments as we had last night, or as a result of that?
I don't know what the legislation would be. I know that almost everybody in radio would do almost anything to avert the kind of thing that has happened, myself included, but I don't know what the legislation would be. Radio is new and we are learning about the effect it has on people. Learned a terrible lesson.
Do you think that this will cause the curbing of radio bulletins on the air today?
I simply can't imagine. It seems to me that the effects of this will... may cause much legislation. I simply don't know. It's the wisdom of radio executives and of an organized public will decide these things for us. It's not up to me to speak. I'm the accused.
I was in Europe at the time that Shushnik was murdered, and I remember very vividly the time the way that came through the air. I should say that your presentation last night was even more dramatic and more realistic than the way the Vienna radio station did theirs.
Yes, the intention.
In view of that, don't you think that somebody here would have been able to gauge the reaction which in fact has occurred throughout the United States?
Well, every radio program tries to be more dramatic than life, as every play tries to be more dramatic than life, and every movie, not less so. I would have been surprised if hurt, as anybody would, if they'd been told that a presentation was less effective than life.
Ken, that was Orson Welles and his press conference on the 31st of October 1938 discussing the War of the Worlds broadcast. And they were talking about legislation. I think the FCC would mandate station identifications, like you were listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford shortly after the War of the Worlds broadcast. He did indicate the method is not original to him, the narration, the news bulletin method. He actually referenced in a couple of things I've read a program called Air Raid. I was going to play that today, or the fall of the city, but another radio drama that had a similar type narration. The Fall of the City also starred Burgess Meredith, so I was really looking to play that, but the poor quality prohibited me from even considering it, even though I played that really poor quality interview of Orson Welles, just here for 5 minutes and 20 seconds of your life. And my reference to Dracula, too. They had done Dracula, I believe, in the 11th of July, 1938. What is that, 61 years after its publication in 1897? That was also one I considered. That's a full hour. And there's no Renfield in it. So I was kind of disappointed in that. Again, I'm featuring just tidbits, such, that contributed to the War of the Worlds broadcast here over the last month or so. And today, we're going to feature Bernard Herrmann. We got another selection queued up. This is from Cape Fear. Thanks. It's just the suite from Cape Fear. There you go. Okay, that was The Suite from Cape Fear by Bernard Herrmann from the 1962 movie starring Gregory Peck and Robert Mitchum. It was remade by Martin Scorsese, I believe, in 1990 or 1991. Bernard Herrmann worked with and scored for Orson Welles in the Mercury Theater on Air. He also followed Orson Welles out to Hollywood and composed music for Citizen Kane in 1941. Was that 3 years after? It's considered the best movie of all time. And it's 3 years after the most infamous radio broad drama of all time. So yeah, I'll probably close with another Bernard Herrmann piece of music. I believe let's play a PSA and then we'll jump right into... I won't play a PSA right now. We'll wait. Because this is actually... This isn't a music program, even though it's filling out to be one today. I'm going to go ahead and play what I usually like to play around here, and that's good old radio dramas. This was episode 23, Battle of Tower Rock, an original air date of the 21st of February, 1954, starring everybody's favorite, James Stewart. This is Arthur, and you're listening to The Grand Hour, 91.5 FM, and or WMFO.org.
The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl. Its handle, unmarked. People call them both the six-shooter. James Stewart as the six-shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still-remembered legends.
Tower Rock sure was spruced up. Flags on almost every building, a big banner stretched all the way across Main Street, all the way from the roof of the hotel to the top of the Wickford Bank. Franklin County Fair, that's what it said. Prizes, rodeo, free barbecue, Saturday, August 20th, come one, come all. Well, tomorrow would be the 20th. I'd come to town day earlier and be sure of getting a room. Good thing I did, too. Only one left is on the second floor. The livery stable side of the hotel at that. I put my clean shirt in the dresser drawer and headed downstairs. The clock in the lobby said 3:15. Well, that meant I had time to sort of give Tower Rock the once-over before supper. Thought maybe I'd wander over and see how Kermit and Rome were getting along. But just as I was crossing the street, I saw Rome come out of the front door. Rome! Hey! Hey, Rome!
Hmm? Oh, Fred! Well, finally decided to put in an appearance, huh? How are you?
I'm fine, Rome. Fine. I was just on my way over to see you.
You're not running short of cash, are you, Britt?
No, this is going to be a social call. Not that I'm flush or anything like that.
Come into town for the fair, huh?
Yeah. I haven't been to one since I don't know when. I figured Dad Morgan's cattle would do without me for a few days, so... Well, how are things with you, Ron?
Oh, so.
Bessie, is she all right?
Oh, pretty well.
Kermit and Thelma?
I guess they're all right.
You guess?
I ain't inquired lately. Well, I better get moving. I told Bessie I'd pick her up at the schoolhouse. She's on the decorating committee. I'll see you later, Brad.
Yeah, I'll see you. Sure couldn't
figure out what was the matter with Rome. Boy, he froze up when I mentioned Kermit. Right? They'd always been more like kin than in-laws. Folks said it sure was lucky for the Wickford girls to marry two fellows who got along so well. Especially after Jess Wickford died and left the bank to both his daughters 50-50. Look, Kermit and Rome had turned into first-class bankers, too. The Wickford Bank probably is worth about twice as much now than it was when Jess had run it.
Well, hello, Brent. Where'd you come from?
Oh, Kermit. Oh, I was just thinking about you.
About me?
Yeah, well, I ran into Rome a minute ago.
I suppose he was shooting off his mouth again.
What? Well, no.
Well, just don't believe everything you hear, Brent. There's two sides to every story. Remember that.
Sure, Kermit.
Well, I got to be running along. Thelma's at the schoolhouse waiting for me to fetch her home.
Well, you could have saved yourself a trip.
Huh?
Well, that's where Rome was heading to get Bessie. He could have picked her up, Thelma, at the same time.
Well, you don't think they'd ride in the same buggy, do you?
Huh?
Well, I'll probably see you at the fair tomorrow. So long.
Yeah, sure. So long. There just wasn't any doubt about it. There's something that happened between the Binghams and the Madden, that's all. There must have been something pretty serious, too, the way Kermit and Rome had been acting. And knowing Thelma and Bessie like I did, I sure was glad I wasn't involved in that. But they were real firm women, Thelma and Bessie, yeah. Always had been, ever since they were girls. I couldn't help wondering just what had set him off. Not that it was any of my business, of course, but I... Well, Otis Spear didn't know. Yeah, being the justice of the peace and the local undertaker, he knew almost everything that went on in Foster County.
You ain't never seen nothing like it, Britt, the way they've been behaving. Why, they even spoke to each other for the past 2 months.
You don't say.
Take turns going to church. One Sunday the Binghams attend services, next Sunday the Maddens, just so Thelma and Bessie won't meet up.
Well, that's the darn... I can't believe
it. Well, that ain't the half, Britt, not the half. You remember the Social 16? You know them couples who always got together and played whist on Friday nights?
Yeah.
Well, it ain't the Social 16 no more. The Binghams pulled out, the McDaniels and Johnsons and the Potters, they left at the same time. We got two social eats now.
You mean this foolishness has gone beyond Thelma and Bessie? Other folks are taking sides, too?
Well, see, they are. The whole town split right down the middle.
Well, I never heard of such a thing. Well, how'd it start, anyway?
Well, last May, that was the beginning. Thelma's birthday is the first week in May. Her sister Bessie's just a year younger, almost to the day. Her birthday's the 10th or 11th, right in there somewhere.
Uh-huh.
Well, seems Kermit bought his wife a new surrey for a birthday present. Had it shipped all the way out from Kansas City. Thelma sure was proud, too. Well, you can't blame her. It was just about the nicest carriage this town had ever seen. Well, the nicest until it came time for Rome to give Bessie her present the following week.
You don't mean he bought Bessie a surrey, too?
That's what he did. Well, yeah. Even fancier than the one Kermit gave to Thelma. Yep, a whole lot fancier. Red leather seats with real springs in them, a white top, and painted white wheels. Of course, Rome said it was just a coincidence that he'd ordered Bessie surrey long before he found out that's what Kermit was giving to Thelma.
Well, and it sounds reasonable, too. He could have done
Yeah,
that.
Some folks think so and some don't. Uh-huh. Kermit and Thelma claimed it was just plain spite work. The Rome and Bessie had always been jealous of him. Anyhow, that surrey business just seemed to set everybody off, especially the women. Oh, being sisters, I guess they'd had their grievances before, but they'd always held them back. Now they just let fly in all directions. Why, Thelma's even going to...
Huh? What are you going to say, Otis?
Oh, nothing, Britt, nothing. you're going to stay for the fair, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, sure, that's why I'm here.
Uh-huh,
yeah.
Well, I was thinking, maybe you wouldn't mind helping me out.
Oh, what?
You see, I'm general chairman of the whole doings, and I got almost everything set excepting some of the judging.
Oh, well, I'm not much of an authority, but I guess I can tell a cow from a horse.
Oh, no. We're all fixed up in that department, but the baked goods and preserves and pickles, well, I just haven't been able to find the right person to hand out the blue ribbons there.
Oh, well, I don't know anything about cooking, Otis.
Well, you know about tasting, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's what you got to do, Brett. Sample whatever they put in front of you and say which one tastes the best.
Oh, no, wait
I'll tell
minute,
you
Otis.
What. Uh-huh. I'll just put you down for preserves. I'll get somebody else to take over the rest of the stuff.
No, but...
Well, I got a meeting with the barbecue committee over at the general store.
Yeah,
you'll be at the schoolhouse 9 o'clock in the morning. That's when the judge is supposed to start.
But where... Otis, what... The idea of me giving out blue ribbons for preserves. I couldn't tell peach from grape if it wasn't for the color. Well, Oh, there wasn't any sense of me standing here in the funeral parlor worrying about it. So I went back to the hotel to fix up for supper. Yeah? Who is it?
Bessie Madden-Britt.
Well, just a second. Won't you come in, Bessie?
Thanks.
Well, you're looking well.
Oh, so are you, Britt. So are you. My goodness, I don't think I've ever seen you look better.
No, now, Bessie.
Well, now, what I come by for was to pick you up and take you over to our house for supper. You don't have no other plans, do you?
No. I was just going to eat here at the hotel.
Oh, you don't think we'd let you eat at the hotel, Britt? Why, you're one of our closest friends, always have been.
Well,
I don't know why Rome didn't invite you when you met up this afternoon. Guess he just took it for granted that you'd know I'd be expecting you. We're having fried chicken, hot biscuits, some of my strawberry preserves. You do like chicken, don't you, Britt?
Oh, sure.
Well, what are we waiting for? I've got my surrey outside, and I'd be glad...
Well, excuse me, Bessie.
Of course, Britt, of course.
Britt, well, I just heard that you were in Tower Rock, and I wanted to tell you Kermit and I are expecting you for supper. Now, I won't take no for an... Oh, I thought you were alone. Didn't mean to interrupt anything.
You're a little late, Selma. Britt's having supper with Rome and me.
Might have expected you'd pull a stunt like this, Bessie Madden. Trying to bribe him, huh?
Bribe ladies.
And
ladies,
I suppose you didn't ask him to supper yourself. This is one time you can't lie out of it, Selma. I heard you with my own voice.
There's no reason I shouldn't ask him. Britt's a friend of mine.
A friend of yours? You've never put yourself out for him before, not once in your whole life.
Bessie.
And since when were you so interested in his welfare?
Selma.
The minute you found out he was going to be judging the preserves tomorrow, that's when.
Preserves?
As if I had any cause to try and influence him. My strawberry preserves have won first prize at every county fair for the last 10 years.
Yes, but I've never entered against you before. I let you win, but this time it's going to be different.
You're just making a fool of yourself, Selma. You couldn't cook up a strawberry preserve if your life depended on it. Huh?
I've got Mama's recipe, too, and don't you forget it.
Now, hold on here. Now, I want to get this straight. Now, both of you have entered your strawberry preserves in the fair tomorrow.
I've entered my preserves. Can't speak for her.
No, mine will be there, too. Don't you worry about that.
And I'm supposed to judge between them, is that it?
Oh, the Spears said you'd agreed to do it.
That's right.
Well, Britt?
Just wait till I get my hands on Otis Spears.
Now, Act Two of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponsett.
Well, I told Thelma and Bessie that I couldn't have supper with either one of them. As a matter of fact, I kind of plain lost my appetite, I guess. I did take me a while to get rid of them, though. They both of them kept lagging behind, wanting to get the last word in. But finally they went home. Well, Otis Spears wasn't at the funeral parlor, so I went over to Widow Berkeley's boarding house where he lived and waited for him. It was after 9 o'clock before he showed up. Miss Berkeley had already gone to bed, and I heard the front door open. I saw him head for the hall steps. Hold on, Otis.
Huh? Britt. Well, what are you doing here?
I just wanted you to know that I won't be judging any preserves tomorrow.
What?
You heard me, Otis.
But Britt, you promised you'd do it.
I didn't promise any such kind of a thing. And I don't appreciate your trying to get me in the middle of this feud between Thelma Bingham and Bessie Madden, either.
Oh, you found out, huh?
I sure did. Well, they were over to see me, both of them. I never heard such a hen squabble in my whole life.
Well, I told you this thing between them was serious.
Well, there were a few things you didn't tell me, like the fact that they're both entering strawberry preserves at the Doohan's tomorrow.
Well, no, Britt, you don't understand it.
I understand, all right. You didn't want to tackle the job of judging those preserves yourself, so you shifted on me. I understand, all right.
I couldn't judge them, Britt. Don't you see? Whichever way I was to choose, I'd make enemies of half the folks in town. My burying business would drop off 50%.
Now, Otis,
yeah, but you're an impartial judge, Britt. You ain't taking no sides in this fracas yet.
And what's more, I don't intend to, either.
Well, course, that's the way you feel. If you want Thelma and Bessie to go on feuding, and you won't do nothing to stop it.
Well, I sure don't see how my judging their preserves would have anything to do with ending their fight.
It's this way, Brett. You're the six-shooter. Everybody in Tower Rock likes you and respects you, and they all know you ain't got no axe to grind in this affair, so whatever decision you handed down, they'd have to accept it. Both Thelma and Bessie.
Oh, maybe they would, maybe they wouldn't.
Oh, they would, all right. Now, what I'm getting at is this, Brett. Folks have forgotten about the two surreys by now. The argument's going way past that. And these here preserves have just about become the crux of the matter. You see, Bessie's always been known for making the best strawberry preserve in the whole county. They're her chief claim to fame, you might say. Why, she's even took blue ribbons at the state fair.
Oh, that's so.
And nobody's even thought of entering against her nut for years and years.
Not until this year.
Yeah, that's right. Uh-huh. Now, if Thelma's preserve should be judged better than Bessie's, well, that'll mean Thelma's beat her on her own ground. Bessie wouldn't have a leg to stand on. She'd just have to admit that Thelma won out, and, well, that might settle the trouble between them.
Mm-hmm. You think that'd be best, Otis, for Thelma's preserves to win?
Well, not necessarily. You see, if Bessie should take the blue ribbon again, well, that'll sort of show everybody that she's still top dog, in the preserve line anyway. And folks who've been supporting Thelma might swing over to Bessie's side. And that might settle everything, too.
Mm-hmm. The way you've got to figure it out, it wouldn't matter who wins. Either way, the fight would be over, is that right?
That's right. That's uh-huh. it, exactly.
Well,
of course, well, it's possible that Thelma's taking first prize might just make Bessie madder than ever and sort of add fuel to the fire. And it's possible that if Bessie was to win again, well, vice versa.
Vice versa, yeah. I'd say it's more than possible. I'd say it's likely.
Oh, now, Britt, you mustn't look on the dark side. I'm absolutely certain that if you make the right decision tomorrow, you'll end this whole thing once and for all. Thelma and Bessie will go back to being fond of each other, and Tower Rock can have a little peace and quiet for change.
I see. And just what is the right decision, Otis?
Why, that's easy, Britt.
It is, huh?
Well, sure. All you have to do is give the blue ribbon to whichever one made the best taste in preserves. You don't think we're running a crooked county fair, do you?
Well, sir, I never saw a fellow like Otis Spears. He could talk circles around a Philadelphia lawyer. Well, finally, I saw that if I was going to get any sleep at all that night, I'd just have to give in. But I made up my mind to one thing. I wasn't going to have Thelma or Bessie turning on me, either one of them. I was going to say that their preserves tasted exactly the same and call it a tie. And that way there wouldn't be any harm done, and I'd be leaving things just the way I found them. Of course, I didn't tell Otis what I was planning to do or anything. I just promised that I'd meet him at the schoolhouse in the morning.
Good. I knew you'd come around, Britt. When you saw how much I needed you, I knew you couldn't let me down.
Well, Otis...
I'll walk you to the door.
Never mind. I'm fine way out. Night.
Night, Britt. See you tomorrow.
Yeah.
Oh, there was one thing I forgot to tell you. It sort of slipped my mind.
What's that?
In case you have any trouble deciding as to whose preserves are the best, well, there couldn't be a tie.
There couldn't be. Why not?
Oh, could call it a tie, but that would still mean that Thelma had won.
How's that?
Well, don't you see, Brett? If Thelma's strawberry preserves are just as good as Bessie's, well, folks would think that Thelma had been letting her sister win all these years by not contesting with her before. No, a tie would be the same as giving the prize to Thelma. You do see that, don't you?
Yes. Sure. Oh, well, so long.
So long, Britt. And may the best woman win.
Britt. Britt.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hello, Kermit. Hi. You're up pretty late, aren't you?
Yeah, I've been looking for you.
For me? Oh.
Yeah, well, Brett, I think this quarrel between Thelma and Bessie and between Rome and me and all the rest of it, I think it's gone entirely too far.
You do? Well, I'm glad to hear you say so.
But if Bessie and Rome won't come to their senses, well, they've just got to be taught a lesson. Maybe Thelma's right. Maybe the fair tomorrow is the place to do it.
What?
Well, at least everybody will be there to see Bessie when she gets her comeuppance. That is, if Thelma's strawberry preserves... Well, what I'm getting at is this. Now, Thelma's just got to win, Britt. If she don't, my life will just be miserable. And Thelma's got a real knack for making me miserable.
Well, I'm wrong.
Hope you don't mind my waiting here in your room, but I just had to see you. Bessie sent me.
Well, it was the same thing over again from Rome, except that he was a little more forceful than Kermit. Well, after he'd gone, I tried to get some sleep, but all night long, I just kept dreaming about strawberry preserves. Jars and jars of strawberry preserves. Anyway, I finally woke up. It was after 7 o'clock, nearly 3 hours after my usual getting up time. Somehow, I didn't feel very rested either. I got dressed, and I stopped off at Gravy Gibson's Cafe for some breakfast. Not that I could eat very much. Then I started off in the direction of the schoolhouse, and the judging was already underway when I got there.
Second prize goes to Mrs. Hal Spidle for her devil's food cake. Honorable mention to Mrs. Johnny Seals for her chocolate lair. Honorable mention to Miss Addie Simpson for her sponge. Now, let's see, the next item is, preserve. I don't see you. Oh, there he is. All right, right up here, Britt. Right up here. There he is.
Excuse me. Beg your pardon.
Well, folks, I guess you all know Britt Ponce. Well, Britt has been kind enough to volunteer his services in judging the preserve. Now, let's see, I believe there are, only two entries. Well, yeah, that's right, two. Both strawberry. Yeah, quite a coincidence. Yes. Well, the first entry is submitted by Mrs. Bessie Madden. Bessie Madden. And the second entry comes from Mrs. Thelma Bingham. Yes, it's there. Now, I'll just unscrew the caps on these jars. Hey, goodness gracious. Miss Madden doesn't know her own... There we are. You can just use a spoon there on the table, Britt. It's clean. All right, if you're ready, here's the first jar. Mrs. Bessie Madden.
Thanks, Otis.
Britt, be careful!
Golly, I don't know how that happened, Otis. I thought I had a good, firm grip on it. Well, I sure am sorry.
I'll bet you are. Well, folks, I seems we had a little accident up here. Mrs. Madden's preserves are kind of divided between the floor and Britt's trousers. I just don't know what we can do under the circumstances. Looks like, we'll have to rule that there's only one entry available for tasting.
You just ruined no such thing, Otis Spears. I've got another jar of my preserves right out in the hall.
Another jar?
Bring them along. Figure it. There might be a slip-up somewhere. I'll be right back.
Well, that was sure far-sighted of Bessie, wasn't it, folks? Well, while we're waiting, Britt can go ahead and taste Mrs. Bingham's jar. Here you are, Britt. I'll hold it for you. Just spoon right in.
Well...
Here now. And I'd appreciate it if you'd see that nothing happens to this one, Otis.
Don't worry, Bessie. Don't you worry. That one come off a little easier. All right, Britt. These are Mrs. Madden's. Go right ahead.
Well,
you had enough?
Yeah,
Yeah, I've had enough.
All right, folks, all right. Quiet down. Britt Ponsett is ready to announce his decision.
Well, it's my opinion that I want to be sure of one thing first. Now, I understand that my job is to say whose preserves taste the best. Is that right? I'm supposed to pick the best-tasting strawberry preserves in the whole county. Is that right, Otis?
That's right, Britt. That's right.
Yeah. All right, then. Now, these preserves of Mrs. Madden's, they're very good. Well, you might say they're excellent. But I've had better. Now, there's no doubt about it. I've tasted better. And right here this morning, too. Right here in Tower Rock. Now, Mrs. Bingham's preserves here. Now, they're good. No, they're more than good. They're excellent, too. But they're not the best. Now, ladies and gentlemen, to me, the best-tasting strawberry preserves in Foster County are the ones I ate this morning at Gravy Gibson's lunchroom. I'm awarding the blue ribbon to Gravy Gibson. You see that he gets it, will you, Otis?
Wait, you can't do this, Rick. Gravy Gibson wasn't even entered.
Now, you told me you wanted me to pick the best-tasting preserves in the county, and that's what I've done.
Why, the very idea, comparing our preserves to the kind of thing Gravy Gibson serves up.
It's an outrage. I've never been so insulted in all my whole life.
Now, you see here, Britt Ponsett.
If you think you can get away with this...
Why, for 10 years, Bessie's preserves have been winning blue ribbons.
And Thelma used the same recipe I did, our mother's recipe, and nobody's ever had a finer recipe for strawberry preserves than Minnie Whitford.
That's right.
Now, just a minute.
Don't you just a minute on.
No, sir. Why, half the time you can't even eat Gravy Gibson's food.
Why, everybody knows that.
Of course. Well, this is the last county fair I'm ever going to enter Otis Spear.
And that goes for me, too. Bessie, come on, let's get out of here.
The sooner, the better.
Well, don't just stand there, Kermit. Can't you see we're leaving?
Yes, dear, yes.
No? Come on.
Yes, Bessie.
Why, did you see that, Brett? They went off together. All four of them. Together.
Yeah, that's how it looked, all right.
Oh, yeah. If that don't beat the Dutch. You got them so mad at you, they all went off together. I might have known you was up to something.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about, Otis. I was just giving my considered opinion about strawberry preserves. The funny thing about it was it's true what I said. The preserves I'd had and my breakfast toast over Gravy Gibson's did taste better than Thelma's or Bessie's. Of course, the fact of the matter was, I really couldn't taste their preserves at all. I just burned the daylights out of my tongue drinking Gravy's coffee. Oh, couldn't taste a thing afterwards. Boy, that was miserable coffee if I ever... The Gravy sure is a terrible cook.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0. All guns are always loaded. Rule 1. Never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3. Be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Medford. You have only one thought tonight, all of you. You who fish the fathoms of the night with poles on rooftops and long loops of wire. Those of you who, driving from some visit, finger the button on the dashboard dial until the metal trembles like a medium in a trance and tells you what is happening in France or China or in Spain or some such country. You have one thought tonight and only one. Will there be war? Has war come? Is Europe burning from the Tiber to the Somme? You think you hear the sudden double thudding of the drum? You don't know. Not now. But what your ears will hear within the hour,
Episode 23, The Battle of Tower Rock. Original air date was the 21st of February 1954. Very interesting there. And Brett Ponsett. And the preserve, judging the preserves at the county fair. Following the PSA was Air Raid, a section of Air Raid. I talked about that earlier. That was influential. And as Orson Welles said, not the method wasn't the War of the Worlds broadcast method was not original to them in the Mercury Theater. So I just played that basically to make sure my aux cable is working on my computer because I had some issues over the weekend. Next, I'm going to close out with Bernard Herrmann. Been featuring him all morning. Again, he followed. He worked with Orson Welles at CBS, scored The War of the Worlds, followed him to Hollywood, scored Citizen Kane in 1941. So I'm going to go ahead and play. This is from Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho. I believe that's 1960. It's a Psycho suite. This is Arthur in the Grand Hour. Thanks for listening here on 91.5 FM, WMFO, and or WMFO.org. Marco's up next. Thanks. We'll be right back.